The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator... Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Friday, December 3rd, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Today's show is jam-packed, so let's get right to it. Joining us here in the studio is our own Ganja John.
What's up, Russ?
Rocking the sub-cool seeds, I see.
Yes, always.
We've also got Cannabis Carrie bringing us our news very quickly here. Carrie, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's gorgeous today on the coast.
Yeah, it's nice.
Friday.
Nice and sunny here in the Pacific Northwest. On today's show, joining us right after our brief news segment, Gatewood Galbraith, along with director Michael Henning and producer Diana Alder from the movie Hempsters, Plant the Seed, will be joining us in a special early interview at 10 after the hour. At half past, we're going to speak with Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com, taking the CelebStoner entertainment news. We're going to talk about the Willie Nelson Teapot Party. And at 45 past, Rick Cusick, the associate publisher of High Times Magazine, is here to discuss a new book, Cannabis, Philosophy for Everyone. What were we just talking about? All that and more coming up on Normal Show Live. Rockin' Friday will be in hour two with Herb Thrasher. Stick around. It's Normal Show Live.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapists will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
The WikiLeaks cables release drama this week includes documents about the failed war on drugs. Classified diplomatic cables released by the website WikiLeaks revealed a growing sense of alarm within Mexico's government that the time is running out in the battle against organized drug traffickers and the fear that they will lose entire regions. Also revealed, the U.S. has lost confidence in the Mexican army's ability to win the country's drug war, branding it slow, clumsy, and no match for, quote, sophisticated narco traffickers. The memo details blunders in the fight against drug cartels and a desperate search for a new strategy to save President Felipe Calderon's administration from a blood-soaked fiasco. The assessments made in a cable to Washington earlier this year are a bleak contrast to Mexican insistence that the state is prevailing in a war declared by Calderon back in 2006, even as the last 4 years have been shocking violence, corruption, beheadings, over 28,000 deaths, and some Mexican cities wavering on the brink of anarchy. The cable laments that only 2% of those detained in Mexico for organized crime-related offenses were brought to trial, and said the army was, quote, incapable of processing information and evidence for judicial cases.
Okay, this just in from the WikiLeaks. The war on drugs doesn't work. That's some interesting interesting news coming there. Hey, Felipe Calderon, I have a new strategy for you. It's called, if you can't beat them, join them. You can't repeal the laws of supply and demand. People want marijuana, so someone's going to supply it, no matter how many guns you throw at them, no matter how much money you throw at the problem. If you can't beat them, join them. Let's legalize marijuana on both sides of the border. Let Mexicans produce it. Let Americans smoke it. Let Americans produce it. Let Mexicans smoke it. All the problems go away.
Governor Chris Christie today said that he would allow 6 nonprofits to grow and sell medical marijuana when the program gets underway next July, as the original law allowed. Back in October, Christie's proposal was only for 2 producers and 4 dispensaries, which prompted support for a resolution demanding that the governor's plan be abandoned. Christie also agreed to back away from requiring doctors to determine all conventional methods of treatment had failed before recommending medical marijuana. The law only required such a step in specific conditions outlined in the bill, such as seizure disorders and glaucoma, and the government said today that that was good enough. Senator Nicholas Scutari, who introduced the original bill and the resolution to repeal Christie's new rules, was absent for this morning's press conference, and Governor Chris Christie took the opportunity to throw a dig his way, saying he had given up trying to negotiate with Scutari, who in his eyes was unwilling to compromise, saying to the press corps, quote, I have to wonder what the motivation is, playing politics? The governor said that within 2 years of the program going live, he'd administration would review the rules to determine whether they need revision.
Governor Chris Christie talking about compromise, huh? Okay, so here's the compromise. When they passed the law, it had 6 alternative treatment centers in the law. The people that passed it in the legislature and the governor before him who signed it, there was 6 places where people could go get their medical marijuana, 6 places that would produce medical marijuana for patients. So Governor Christie comes out and says, no, we're going to make 4 of them into dispensaries and 2 of them into grow sites. And now the compromise is, well, okay, we'll let you have 6 dispensaries. Oh boy, we get the compromise of what was the original law in the first place. Wonderful bargaining there, Scutari. Wonderful bargaining out there in New Jersey, making this great compromise with the Republican. Are you sure there's not a job for you guys in the Obama administration?
And one last one. The ACLU is suing the Michigan cities of Birmingham, Bloomfield Hills, and Livonia because the 3 cities have effectively banned medical marijuana dispensaries, despite a state law approved by voters that legalizes the drug for medical purposes. The lawsuit is not asking for any money, but is asking that the cities repeal each of their local ordinances that ban medical marijuana dispensaries. The ACLU is claiming that the Michigan medical marijuana law is crystal clear when it comes to the will of Michigan voters to allow patients to have access to medical cannabis if their doctors believe it can be helpful. But local law enforcement has claimed that the law is too murky to be enforced. Clarifying the Michigan medical marijuana law will now fall into the hands of Governor-elect Rick Schneider and the new legislature that takes office in January.
Well, this is, you know, medical marijuana passed in Michigan at 63%. It passed in all 83 counties in Michigan, right? So it's pretty clear the people support medical marijuana. And implied in that, or actually written out in the law, is that caregivers can be reimbursed for their expenses. And there's got to be some place for patients to be able to get their medicine. It's clear the people of Michigan support medical marijuana. So if you support medical marijuana, you've got to support people having some place to be able to get it. The problem that crops up here, though, if you'll pardon the pun, is that the Michigan law doesn't explicitly define these dispensaries or explicitly define how they should be regulated, who can run them, where they can be, or anything like that. And then that causes problems in certain cities. Now, these cities that we're talking about in these news stories, Livonia, Bloomfield Hills, and Birmingham, have actually come up with an ordinance that says that no business shall be allowed in the city limits that violates local, state, or federal laws. And that's how they're trying to get rid of any sort of dispensary operations in their cities, is using that little trick of the federal law. Now, we've seen in cases that have come through the courts in California that local law enforcement, local officials, it's not their jobs to enforce federal law. That's the job of the FBI. That's the job of the DEA, the ATF. The federal agencies enforce federal law. Local agencies enforce local law. State agencies enforce state law. This is yet another end run around by these conservative communities that don't particularly like medical marijuana, trying to trample on people's rights who need that medical marijuana. The lawsuit from the ACLU here is for a woman in her 60s, I believe it is, who has multiple sclerosis, and she needs to be able to access medical marijuana. It's not like she's going to be able to get on her hands and knees in the garden and grow it herself. Let's come to the right decision here. I hope the ACLU's lawsuits make these people back down, or that the courts force them to allow the medical marijuana access the people of Michigan intended. All right, folks, when we come back, we'll be right back with Gatewood Galbraith, Michael Henning, and Diana Alder from Hempster's Plant the Seed. You're listening to Normal Show Live.
Been busted? Need a lawyer? Call the Normal Legal Committee for an attorney near you. Find one at norml.org. Remember, attorneys are cheaper than a lifelong criminal drug record.
Just have freedom. Freedom. I'm free to do whatever.
The most devastating effect of the war on marijuana is that it is a war on everyday people like you and me. All week, we speak to the doctors, scientists, celebrities, and politicians who make up the professionals fighting for cannabis liberty. But we never forget about the tens of millions who use cannabis, the millions who need medical access to cannabis, and the hundreds of thousands arrested every year for cannabis, and the tens of thousands imprisoned under our marijuana laws. At Normal, we are the Cannabis Consumers Lobby, and we take this opportunity to share the experience of our cannabis community.
Welcome back, everyone. 11 after the hour, we are awaiting the call-ins from our guests, Gatewood Galbraith, who, of course, is longtime hemp advocate and run for governor a number of times. The director, Michael Henning, will be calling as well, and the producer, Diana Alder. So we figured we'd take this opportunity to play the trailer from the movie so you can see what we'll be talking about. This is the new documentary coming out, Hempsters, Plant the Seed.
One of the biggest problems facing the legalization of industrial hemp is its confusion with marijuana, which is, you know, really a distant cousin.
This is a fail-tested industrial hemp seed. Well, from what little planting I've done, I think that should germinate.
Do you have your underwear?
Yes, sir.
The petrochemical, pharmaceutical, military, industrial, transnational, corporate,
fascist elite, son of a bitch,
utilize the lawmaking powers of Congress to get through legislation which has criminalized the farmer who's gone into competition with these synthetic manufacturers.
The DEA's intrusion into the realm of agriculture is preventing American farmers from growing a crop that has the potential to help address the global depletion of forest resources, the dependency on foreign oil, harmful effects of petrochemicals, the excessive use of pesticides for fiber crops, and the economic depression of farming communities.
Why is it that everything that is good for our bodies, our communities, and our planet called an alternative? An alternative to what?
Hemp is the number one fiber, the number one fuel, the number one food, and number one medicine.
Why the hell are we paying taxes to a government like this that doesn't represent us?
We have to change our languaging and not allow them to call hemp the alternative. Hemp is the solution.
You may be brave, but you sure aren't free.
Now, that's a great film. Hempsters Plant the Seed. And you can see some of the names that are in that. Willie Nelson, Julia Butterfly Hill, Merle Haggard, and Woody Harrelson. And, of course, Gatewood Galbraith. And we're still waiting for the calls to call in. We just got this booking late today. So we were moving our schedule around to try to get them accommodated. But apparently not on the line yet. So we'll continue on here. Hempsters, of course, is pointing out the move for industrial hemp, which in a lot of countries is currently grown. Australia, Canada, China even grows industrial hemp. That's right. In a communist country, they have farmers growing industrial hemp, but here in the land of the free, we are forbidden from doing so. In most situations, the industrial hemp is usually the marijuana that's contained of less than 1% THC. And at the beginning of that clip, you heard Rudy Harrelson talk about how difficult it is to deal with the how difficult it is to get the hemp legislation passed because of its confusion with marijuana. And this, again, to my point of view, calls out the need for us to just legalize all marijuana. Otherwise, there will always be a conflict between the industrial hemp, trying to keep it at low enough THC to not be covered as marijuana. Now, in the meantime here, we're going to go back to Cannabis Carrie because she has another news story we're going to hold on to for the second hour. But as we're waiting for our callers, we'll take this opportunity to get this news out to you. So, Carrie, what do we have?
I'm here. Just one moment.
So sorry about that.
I didn't think you were going to throw it back to me so fast, but here we go.
I know. I expected the calls to come in, but we're still waiting. So
that's okay. This is great because this item is from our friends at Toke of the Town. A group called Overgrow the World has started the world's most literal grassroots campaign. The group's founder, Electro Pig von Falkengruven, probably not his real name, told Toke of the Town that he wants activists and non-activist cannabis consumers to plant marijuana seeds in public in highly visible places this spring to help further the cause of legalization. A global spring planting is planned to specifically target areas that are plainly visible in order to get more national and international media coverage on the issue of cannabis re-legalization. He said that he figures the best way to bring his campaign to the streets of every town, city, and village in the world so people will see that plants are not chasing children down the street, that it might start to filter into even the most willful, ignorant person's mind. Von Falkengruven says that quietly planting a seed and walking away isn't even the most perverse media or politician can twist into calling a violent act. So he's urging stealthy seed planters to walk away from the plant so that several weeks will go by away from the scene of the crime before any plant will become easily visible and begins to speak for itself. Now, he admits the idea isn't a new one, but he hopes that this spring it catches on with would-be activists to participate in this global act of civil disobedience. He was inspired by a photo on the internet that showed a rather large cannabis plant in a hanging basket on a main street in some town in southern U.S. He says the political agenda of his Overgrow the World organization is to free cannabis for all of its uses, not just the farmers or just the medical users or just the recreational users or just industry or even just manufacturing or whatever other just that you can think of. He said everyone needs free access in order to be able to make an informed decision on what uses cannabis and hemp can have for them. He said that there are two simple steps to become part of this movement. First is to save or collect or buy some cannabis or hemp seeds, and the second is to plant them next spring in a public place where they will attract the maximum amount of attention. Now, he does have a website if you are interested in learning more, although that's about it. It's at overgrow.ning.com for what it's worth.
I've heard of that notion before, you know, overgrow the government, take your seeds, you know, be Johnny Appleweed, you know, going about the town and spreading hemp seeds. And then, you know, it's an interesting method of civil disobedience. And I don't know how effective it is because they just see the plants and they, you know, pull them up. So, but you know, when this happens, we get people that plant them at like the steps of City Hall or they'll plant them in the one I heard, I think it was last year, where the people, they found the plants growing on the Army base in Kansas. And of course, a lot of them were the old industrial hemp plants that you'd have from the old Hemp for Victory campaigns that we had back in the 1940s and 50s. But I don't know about the success of the Overgrow the Government. I guess it's something that can't hurt. Collect up your seeds, take them to places and plant them, walk away, and then we'll let nature take its course. It's an idea, something that Mark Emery was often fond of saying. And, you know, poor Mark Emery, now he's doing 5 years here in the federal prison for his attempts to overgrow the government. But you know, in the words of Jeff Goldblum's character on Jurassic Park, life finds a way, right? We're gonna plant the seeds everywhere we can, and life will just find a way. One thing I liked also about the Hempsters preview that we showed you there is Julia Butterfly Hill's point about calling hemp an alternative, you know, an alternative fuel, an alternative fiber, when in fact it really is the solution for this planet. As our population continues to grow and we continue to depend on fossil fuels, especially especially as China and India become more developed, and now Brazil becoming more developed, and also losing that rainforest in the South American area, it's more and more vital that we come up with an energy source that is carbon neutral. And hemp can do that for us. Hemp becomes a carbon sink. It, you know, all those hemp fields that you grow pull in the greenhouse gases, the carbon dioxide that would be so harmful to our environment. And so that's what we need to move to. We need to move to a hemp-based economy, using hemp for all of our needs here in America, instead of sending our money overseas to communist Chinese farmers that are growing hemp, or sending our money up to Canada. No offense to my Canadian friends, but I think we ought to have some American hemp grown right here in the good old USA. Oh, we don't have that. Well, it's 20 after the hour, folks, and we're just kind of juggling things, trying to go as quick as we can here. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll do our Rockin' Friday music with Herb Thrasher. This is Normal Show Live. Back in a minute.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
If I were to tell you that in America, right now, over 1 million children sell marijuana, what would you think? Would you think that any public policy that creates over 1 million teenage marijuana dealers needs to be re-examined and possibly amended? You would not be alone. The members of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, aka NORML, have been working since 1970 to reform marijuana laws such that responsible adults, not children, sell and use marijuana. Isn't it high time to reform America's misguided marijuana laws? This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML in Washington, D.C. Only concerned citizens can effectively end the federal government's nearly 70-year-old prohibition on responsible adult marijuana sales and use. Want to know more about how you can help? Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's popular and informative webpage at NORML, NORML.org.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we take you into the weekend with Rockin' Friday, our segment featuring the best rock, metal, punk, and jam band music, brought to you by Herb Thrasher at herbthrasher.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. Welcome back, everybody. Closing out the week with some great rock, and big thanks to Herb Thrasher for adjusting on the fly to our crazy shifting schedule. Appreciate you having you here.
Right on, man. No problem, Russ. We're glad to do it. We always got rock, and the rock always comes, so no problem.
All right, so what's on tap today?
Well, you know, before I get to the rock real quick, I do want to say that I appreciate and I'm loving all this hemp talk. You know, it's such an important deal, and we've really got to get that going on in the news, too. You know, Prop 19 and everything's always been in the news, and hemp does seem to be forgotten a lot of times, and hempster is definitely going to bring it back, but it's good stuff, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and right on. We're looking forward to getting Gatewood on the show sometime. We'll talk a little bit more about it. Just got our wires crossed today. I'm sure we'll have something in the future. So let's hear the song.
Right on. So we're going to stay in the stoner rock world this time, guys. And sometimes the best bands in rock and roll are the simple bands who just rock. Add a smoky tone guitar and you get Fireball Ministry. Fireball Ministry are one of the best kept secrets of the underground. This is one stoner rock outfit that knows how to bring it, like fire. Fireball Ministry plays hard rock like it never went out of style, and this is part of what makes them great. They don't care about trends in music or for radio hits. Rather, they just want to crank out their own brand of smoky heavy riffs, brand of rock and roll, and just rock. The Reverend James A. Rhoda II, Reverend Emily J. Burton, Reverend John G. Orsnick, and the Rev. Johnny Chow together offer up their metallic brand the faithful rock to the congregation.
They're all revs. They're all revs.
They're all revs, and all, and this is the congregation today, dude. They're all revs.
Okay.
Firebomb Ministry rule goes like this: if shit rocks, it rocks. Period. So, sit back, guys, and check out this groovy track in Fireball Ministry. It's sure to make you want to fire one up and feel like a king. Rock on, guys.
Rock on, Scott. We'll be right back.
Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing media, and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Marijuana culture is infused throughout America and the world. As we round out the week, we take a look at the 420 phenomenon in movies, TV, music, and sports with former High Times editor and author of Pot Culture, Steve Bloom, in our CelebStoner.com entertainment news.
All right, half past the hour. Welcome back, everyone, to NORMAL Show Live. I've got to update that intro. The author of not only Pot Culture, but the co-author of the Reefer Movie Madness Stoner Film Guide, it is Steve Bloom on the phone with us from New York. Steve, welcome back.
Hey, Russ, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. And, you know, I've been looking forward to talking to you about this topic. You know, when it comes to celebrities and entertainment and cannabis, you don't get any better story than Willie Nelson and the whole Willie Nelson bust. I just wanted to talk to you about that and the political upsurgence this has caused. This is going to be very interesting.
Well, yeah, it is very interesting. Obviously, sometimes it takes, a marijuana arrest to get somebody really activated. It took that with Tommy Chong. And, you know, not to say that Willie Nelson has never been arrested before, but when he was arrested in 2006, he didn't, send out this sort of clarion call to all of us marijuana smokers and activists to try and do something about it. And he got arrested a week ago today, in Texas at a Border Patrol. His bus was pulled over. He wasn't even on tour. He was just coming back from a Thanksgiving dinner in California, and he was heading to Austin, and he had a gig the next day or the day after, and so he was just going to get himself situated back home in Texas. And he got pulled over in this place called Sierra Blanca, which is about 80 miles east of El Paso on the highway, Interstate 10, and it's a pretty standard checkpoint that's very close to Mexico, not on the border, but about 30 miles, 20 miles, maybe 10 miles where the bird flies from Mexico. And it's one of those places where you really got to watch it, because they're going to pull you over, and they're generally looking for legal immigrants, but if they find drugs, obviously they're going to go for that too. And Willie fell into the net. They pulled the bus over. It was 9 in the morning, and so he was probably even sleeping, and or who knows, but they must have been going through the night from California, and they smelled marijuana on the bus, and next thing there's a dog on the bus, and they found what was originally reported to be 6 ounces of marijuana, and actually that figure is not correct. It took a few days for the arrest report and mugshot to be released, and 3 days later, the detention report stated that it was 2 to 4 ounces, which is a Class A misdemeanor, which has the potential of a year in jail, $2,000 fine, probation, that kind of stuff. So Willie's going to have to go back to court and deal with these problems like he did after the Louisiana arrest in 2006.
Yeah.
But what was interesting, for me, on the heels of that, getting a little noise there, Russ.
Oh, sorry.
I don't know. Okay, that's a little cleaner. What was, interesting to me, was that, with CelebStoner, obviously, this is sort of one of the main focuses of the website is to deal with celebrity drug arrests. And actually, the website started, when Willie got arrested in 2006, because I didn't even have the website then, and I had a blog on Blogger, and I posted the stash photo of Willie's stash from 2006, and it was
it was almost a, like a pound of pot and mushrooms. It was kind of a, you know, really graphic photo, and it really blew up on my little blog, and I decided, well, I have to sort of like go beyond a little blog at this point if I'm going to get this kind of traffic when I post something like that. And so that really was kind of the inspiration for Celeb Stoner. I don't like to say, you know, somebody's bad luck is the inspiration for starting a site, but
right.
The fact of the matter is that a lot of celebrities do get arrested for marijuana, and, you know, I've been chronicling that for the last 4 years, and so now 4 years later, here we go again with Willie. But the difference is that, you know, Willie kind of came back after 2 days. I sent an email that I had, you know, an email address for Willie, and I sent an email inquiring about this arrest, and he comes back and with a comment that was really kind of surprising. I'm just looking it up on the website right now to get it exactly as Willie stated it. He wrote to me. He said that there's the Tea Party. How about the Teapot Party? Our motto: we lean a little to the left. And then he went on to say, tax it, regulate it, and legalize it, and stop the border wars over drugs. Why should the drug lords make all the money? Thousands of lives will be saved. And so I was pretty stunned by that. I'm getting another echo. And I put my head together with Rick Cusick from High Times, who I used to work with there. And, you know, we did a cover story on Willie back in 2006 together. And we're big Willie fans, so we always just talk about Willie a lot. And Rick called me when he heard about the arrest. And then when I got this notice back from this email back from Willie, I got in touch with Rick. And Rick had his thinking cap on, and he basically said, let's start a Facebook page. So I started the page Willie Nelson's Teapot Party, and it just has blown up, beyond my wildest imagination. I've never really had this experience with Facebook. I have my own page on Facebook, but I've never utilized Facebook for such a purpose. And overnight, you know, we had, you know, 15, 20,000 people coming to the site, liking it. And then what's happened from that point, without even asking anybody, it's very much, you know, people doing their own thing. We've had now 50 states have all set up Teapot Party pages on Facebook, and they're kind of raring to go. So, you know, it's like every day there's another one, and there's just so much action and traffic on that site. So I'm running that page, you know, constantly posting new stuff, and there's just constantly something going on. And, you know, Willie got a Grammy nomination yesterday, or Willie played Abilene yesterday, and somebody, you know, the website is still moving, which is a great blog site that focuses on Willie. I've always loved that site. They had like pictures from Abilene last night immediately. And, you know, whatever we have that's Willie-related or, you know, other arrests like Curtis Blow getting arrested in L.A. Yesterday at LAX, or the drummer from AC/DC paying a fine for an arrest in New Zealand, you know, we're sort of, you know, lighting the fire everywhere, because obviously it's not just Willie's problem. You know, Willie has the problem that kind of, you know, has, you know, maybe force the issue a little bit more to the surface. And honestly, you know, this is, you know, there's way too many, you know, I mean, arrests for marijuana to begin with, as we know, over 800,000 in the U.S. But, you know, the celebrity drug arrests are really on the rise. They've been cataloging that all year long, and it's really kind of stunning. So it's just not Willie, and we need those celebrities, as we always say, to come out a little bit more and talk about this. So anyway, I did the first post on this thing. I sent it to Tommy Chong. He jumped aboard saying, you know, any political teapot parties are a wonderful idea, and he just sort of jumped on it. And, you know, he had his, if I can, you know, look back to that for a second, I'll find his quote. But so we got Willie and Tommy on board, which is great. Really haven't heard too much from other celebrities. I did hear from Ray Benz from Asleep at the Wheel. You know, he says he's very much in support of it as well. And we're just moving along now. Now we've been contacted by the Meetups people, and they're setting up a page for us, and we're going to really kind of get this going. The next step of like people starting to meet up, and then starting to build this idea of, okay, what is it that we're doing? You know, because, you know, obviously we have a purpose, which is to change the marijuana laws, reform the laws, which of course Normal has been working on forever. And, you know, what can we do in conjunction with Normal and other organizations out there to just, you know, just keep lighting the fire? It just feels like this is the next big thing that has happened after Prop 19. I think people were waiting for something to do, you know, where could they channel their energy? And they just decided, it seems like, to channel it into this new Teapot Party movement. So we're sort of still determining, you know, what that really all means and what does it stand for. So it's only been, less than a week. And I'm sort of at the controls a little bit, but, I'm not looking to run anything. I'm not looking to be some party chairman or anything like that.
I was just going to say that that's an amazing that we're getting that starting like that, just off of a kind of, I don't know, did you think Willie was saying it just as an offhand comment, or did he really intend to get a burgeoning political movement going?
I think it was an offhand comment, and we ran with it. I was a little worried maybe Willie was going to come back and say, hey, I think you've gone a little bit overboard here. But he sent me back a note saying, like, keep it going, So obviously, he was just maybe throwing something out there, and we just decided to run with it and just see, okay, what can we do? Where can we take this? And, the Teapot Party, idea, I think, obviously is based on the Tea Party, that have kind of been sort of the rage in the conservative world over the last couple of years, and it's led to some candidates like Rand Paul winning senator and senatorial race in Kentucky, and some other winners during this last election. So isn't it about time that we have candidates who we can get behind, and maybe we can make a difference with the political power that we have, because we have such a strength in numbers. We may not have won in California, but we still had over 3 million people voting for marijuana legalization. So when can we start to get our candidates out there who believe in what we believe in and other things that we believe in, climate change and environmental issues, obviously economic issues, foreign policy issues, and stuff like that that lean to the left. So it's sort of like this liberal party that, it just needs to go a little bit left of what the Democrats are doing, because the Democrats are not really doing what we need them to do. And so, so we can push them a little bit, and maybe we can also edge our way into, political office, by probably running democratically, but having the support of the Teapot, parties to get maybe some candidates, running for Congress and running for state offices, and who knows.
Yeah, exactly. And we're speaking with Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com. I definitely want to encourage everyone to check out CelebStoner.com. And your books are great Christmas presents, the Pot Culture book, the Reefer Movie Madness book. Before we let you go, though, I wanted to get back to the bust itself. You mentioned how he was busted and they originally said it was 6 ounces, and now it's suddenly become 2 to 4 ounces. Do you think maybe those folks started to look at the notion of, if we charge Willie Nelson with a felony, we'll be run out of Texas?
I'm not really sure, how that went. I mean, obviously you can sort of, look back and say, oh, well, where'd the other 2 ounces go, or where'd the other 4 ounces go? When they say 2 to 4, I don't know. Maybe, it was a little hard to tell, what the thinking was there. But, it's just like in the fine print of the detention report, it says 2 to 4 ounces. So, it's just sort of like maybe a miscommunication, or yes, maybe it could have been in a felony. But, it is like the top category of a misdemeanor, so it's a Class A. But Willie got off the last time with a lot more quantity in his possession in Louisiana, so most likely he will probably get off again. But he's going to have to go through hoops to get there. In the meanwhile, deal with it legally, lawyers, court case, going there, and dealing with it. And obviously it's really upset a lot of people. They look at Willie and they say he's a national hero. And I honestly would have to ask. I'd love to ask. I wish somebody would have more of these town hall meetings, and somebody would just ask Obama and say, what do you think about Willie Nelson getting arrested? I mean, I cannot imagine Obama is proud of this. A lot of people feel he's not on our side, but he's been really great when it comes to medical marijuana, and he really hasn't said much, about any other issue related to marijuana. And obviously the White House took a stance against Prop 19, which wasn't very nice of them, but kind of expected. I just don't think it could be a proud moment for America, to put a guy like Willie Nelson through this. I mean, then again, he's like everybody else, and so some people feel like, hey, don't treat him any differently, but he is different, and he is on a bus that, is kind of being targeted as he goes around the country, and probably every day of the week, they could target Willie's bus and pull it over. So most of the time they don't. I mean, his bus got hassled the one of his other buses, the crew and band buses got hassled in North Carolina earlier this year, and they arrested, one of the guys in the band and some of the crew. crew guys, or at least they gave them citations for marijuana and moonshine. So, you know, they're a target, and so are all these other band buses. Like Ray Benson said from The Sleep at the Wheel, he tells me, by the way, our bus got busted, you know, like a week ago in Tennessee going along I-40. He wasn't on the bus, but, you know, his road manager got arrested. So these buses are a target, and so Willie is a constant target. You know, so, you know, it's really tough for these guys, and I think Willie isn't the kind of guy who's going to hide it. You know, hey, I'm going to smoke my weed on my bus. This is my home.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And he looks at it, it's like, this is my home. You know, how dare you come into my home without a search warrant? But
yeah.
On the highways, you can do whatever you want, you know, and they're not treating it like a home, you know, and there should be laws to protect people driving along, you know, in their homes on the highways and their Winnebagos and things like that. People live, some people live that way, you know, and they don't have homes. I mean, well, obviously, Willie has homes, but Willie travels from place to place, and he does not stay in hotels. He stays in his bus, you know. Maybe he takes
exactly.
a night off in the hotel and, you know, and gets a good night rest, or, you know, cleans up in a nice bath and a shower. But by and large, you know, he lives in this vehicle. So, you know, I just think, you know, I would love, you know, somebody to ask, because it became such a big, you know, Jimmy Kimmel and everybody else making jokes, and that's fine, you know, because it just puts it out there broader. But, you know, just so many comments on the website, I mean, over and over and over again, leave Willie alone, free Willie, you know, and it just disgusts people that they treat this, you know, treasure, this national treasure.
Yeah.
This man
77 years old.
77 years old. Maybe 78 next year. He is a treasure. He is so beloved, not only here, but around the world. You know, how dare they?
Yeah, I would say,
But how dare they arrest the other 800,000, too? So
right,
how
right.
dare they?
Yeah, and when you look at between Tommy Chong and Willie Nelson, Tommy's, what, 71, 70, something like that, to Willie Nelson,
yeah.
77. I mean, they are the proof right there of the how you can use marijuana all your life, and you know, you're 70 and you're still touring, and Willie does what, 300 dates a year, something like that? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, healthy. I mean, you know, I think it promotes longevity, you know?
I agree. Well, Steve, we got to wrap things up. I'm going to get Rick Cusick on the line here. We're discussing his new book. But speaking of books, I want to make sure you can tell everybody how they can get their Christmas copies or Hanukkah copies or whatever gift they wish to give copies for your newest book, The Reefer Movie Madness.
Well, you can go to Amazon. You know, that's the easiest way to get it online. It's also available in stores, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Urban Outfitters, Spencer Gifts, any place where books are sold. You know, a lot of other places online, but you know, the main place is Amazon. You know, buy a few copies at Amazon and drive up our rankings. That makes us feel good. And I do wish all my Jewish brethren out there happy Hanukkah.
All right, thank you so much, Steve Bloom. CelebStoner.com, the number one source for celebrity entertainment news. When we come back, we'll be speaking with Rick Cusick from High Times Magazine on the new book, Cannabis Philosophy for Everyone. What were we just talking about? We're back after this.
Just say no.
No matter what you call it, it's a huge part of popular culture.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech? Drug school.
You don't need weed school. You just need a copy of the new book, Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life.
Hey, this is great, man.
Even if you never smoked marijuana.
I never used marijuana. Sorry.
Don't think you smoked marijuana.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two and didn't inhale.
Or you used to smoke marijuana.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Pot Culture by former High Times editor Steve Bloom and Shirley Halperin will answer every question you ever had about marijuana culture.
Has that marijuana made it back up here yet?
Check out Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life at Amazon.com or visit PotCultureBook.com today.
Too bad, man. I just stopped smoking yesterday.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that interact nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement in prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now, we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our Normal Show Live Cannabis Conversations.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the show. 48 after the hour, we're going to be speaking with Rick Cusick from High Times. We're just getting him on the line. Cannabis Carry is working out the extensions and everything. And this is in regards to a new book that is out. It was really fascinating to me, edited by Dale Jacquette, and it's called Cannabis, Philosophy for Everyone. And the subheading here is, What Were We Just Talking About? And the foreword is written by Rick Cusick from High Times Magazine. So we're hoping to get him on the air here to talk about this. But this is definitely a philosophy book. As we look at it, there's a lot of different people involved in the book, and we're just having all sorts of fun phone time today, aren't we? Ah, I misdialed the number. Did I misdial? Carrie, it's the number that we usually call Danny Danko on, if that helps any. But some of the folks here involved include Dr. Lester Grinspoon. He is, of course, the Harvard emeritus who's often considered the father of medical marijuana here in the in America. And we also have our own Dr. Mitch Earlywine has contributed to the book as well with a item here on politics, prohibition and morality. So I wanted to get to one thing that Rick had mentioned here in the book with regard in his foreword, a great little story that he tells here. He says, three men come up against a locked door. The first man is drunk out of his mind. The second man is tripping wildly on LSD. And the third man is stoned on really good marijuana. The first man says, let's knock down the goddamn door. The second man says, let's float through the keyhole. And the third man says, let's sit down and wait for someone to show up with the key. I think that's really interesting. And he points out how it's time now in America to be addressing marijuana prohibition. And we're going to, John, if we could, let's pull up a bumper here so I can try and get Rick on the line. We're having some problems with the phone communications here through Skype. But apparently I dialed the wrong number and really angered someone at a place called Silver Communications. I apologize for that. We'll be right back after this short break here. And stay tuned. It's Normal Show Live.
In terms of legalization of drugs, I think that the battle, the war on drugs has been a utter failure.
The war on drugs has been a utter failure.
And I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws. The war on drugs has been a utter failure.
Normal Show Live, where we don't change our position on decriminalization in an election year.
Ever wonder how often to change your bong water? The most effective method for making pot brownies? The best destination for a ganja getaway? How to hide herb in your car? Whether to grow your own? How precisely to legalize it? Or how something as wonderful as marijuana ever got to be illegal in the first place? Finally, you can find all these answers and much more in the official High Times Pot Smokers Handbook, featuring 420 things to do when you're stoned. Since 1974, High Times Magazine has covered marijuana in all its aspects and wonders, from cultivation to legalization to the herb's enduring and exalted place in popular culture. Packed with inside information, the official High Times Pot Smokers Handbook wove all of his collected wisdom together into a single indispensable ganja guide, including an entertaining look at marijuana's history, profiles of herb-friendly travel destinations and festivals, favorite potluck recipes from the High Times staff, smoking skills, advocacy and activism, essential marijuana movies and songs, profiles of famous cannabis strains, comprehensive growing information, celebrity endorsements, and much more. This is truly, finally, the ultimate guide to green living.
All right, we are back, and joining us on the telephone, we've finally gotten through to him, Rick Cusick, associate publisher of High Times Magazine and author of the foreword to this new book, Cannabis Philosophy for Everyone, What Were We Just Talking About? Welcome to the show, Rick.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Russ. I'm a pleasure to be here.
Glad to have you here. And I was reading the foreword today. I read some read folks the intro story you have about the man on the drunk man, the man on LSD, and the man stoned on marijuana. And I was wondering if you could just give folks an idea of what you meant by that.
I'm sorry. What were we just talking about?
the first man drunk out of his mind, the second man tripping on LSD, and the third man stoned on marijuana come to the locked door.
Yes, indeed. I've been telling that story for years. That's the Cannabis Philosophy of Everyone. The subtitle is "What Were We Just Talking About?" And that's the first anecdote that's in my forward. I first heard that anecdote maybe 20, 30 years ago, and I've been waiting for the opportunity to use it. And it seemed particularly philosophical.
Yeah.
And the thrust of this book is particularly philosophical, and the actual anecdote is: the first man says, "Let's knock down the door," and the second man says, "Let's." The first man's on is drunk, and the second man is tripping on LSD, and the third man's on really good marijuana. And the first man says, "Let's knock down the damn door," and the second man says, "Let's float through the keyhole," and the third man on marijuana says, "Let's wait for someone to show up with the key."
Yeah.
And that's always been, I think, particularly revealing. People take different drugs for different reasons. And as we all know, alcohol can lead you to violence, and LSD can distort your perceptions. But marijuana makes you very, very, very reasonable.
Yeah, and that's what this is about there. This is a philosophical discussion of cannabis. Unlike some of the other books we talk about on the show, where we're talking about the medical aspects or the industrial aspects of hemp or the legal aspects of why or why it shouldn't be prohibited. Here we're talking about the actual philosophy of cannabis use and the people that use it. And you wrote something in the foreword also that I wanted you to address. You say, there are overblown claims on both sides of the equation, and that's referring to both people who support and oppose prohibition of marijuana. There are overblown claims on both sides of the equation, and we need to have a more disciplined discourse that philosophy provides. And you say we need to have a more thoughtful, more civilized discussion now more than ever. And could you give us an idea? Because, you know, being on this side, being in the choir, we kind of know what the overblown claims are of the reefer madness prohibitionists. What do you think of the overblown claims on our side that we need to address philosophically?
Well, you know, I mean, these are my own opinion, and I'm sure everybody has what their overblown claims might be. But a lot of times, because we are an embattled class, we have a tendency to overamp, not all of us certainly, but a lot of us have a tendency to overamp the position of marijuana within the world, in my opinion. We talk about marijuana can save the planet. I'm not sure it could save the planet. We have very, very difficult and nuanced problems in this world. But what marijuana can do is it can help cure the planet. And what it can do is it can act as an agent for good in a world where evil often flourishes. Saving the planet is going to be a lot harder than any one substance or any one philosophy can allow. We have a lot of times people saying that, I have a lot of different opinions on this. I think that, you know, people make claims recently, most controversially, about marijuana being able to cure cancer. Whereas I think that marijuana can mitigate cancer, and I think that's been proven. And I think that cancer is a catch-all for a lot of different disorders. I think that to say that it cures cancer is an overblown statement. That, of course, is my own opinion, and it's subject to argument by a lot of different people. But I think that we need to have reasonable discussions, because right now we are on the precipice of legalization. And in order to get legalization, we can agree amongst ourselves that marijuana should be legalized, but in order to get legalization, we need to convince other people to jump on this side of the fence. Mm. And we're not going to do that verbally. We're going to do that by having reasonable discussions that address both ends of the equation.
We're speaking with Rick Cusick, associate publisher of High Times Magazine. And just a programming note, we will run long today because we have other guests calling in, Gatewood Galbraith, Michael Henning, and Diana Alder, who we'll get to right after our discussion here with Rick Cusick on this new book, Cannabis Philosophy for Everyone. And as we look through the book, it's really interesting in that how it's broken down, the different ways. And again, the editor of this book, Dale Jacquette, the way he broke this down into different categories. We have cannabis phenomenology, marijuana and spiritual enlightenment, creatively high, psychosociological dimensions of cannabis culture, cannabis ethics and politics, and a wonderful cast of contributors that contributed to this book. Rick, what did you find most fascinating in reading this book? What things were opened up in your mind by some of these contributors?
Well, when I was asked to contribute the introduction, the forward to the book, I got an advanced copy, and I sat down, and I dutifully read every essay in the book, and it opens with Lester Boone's beautiful essay on his canvas odyssey. And then what I noticed right after that, the very next essay, was an anti-cannabis viewpoint. And back and forth, with even though I come to believe Dale is certainly falls on our side of the equation here, he has created a group of essays, some of which argue in favor of cannabis, and some of which argue against cannabis, and some of which fall in the middle and ask philosophical questions about it. What I experienced most, of course, I read the things like Lester's essay and Mitch Olewan's essay that I agree with intrinsically. But, you know, reading the anti-marijuana people, I had a lot of fun because I would just sit there and go, what a load of rubbish. What a bunch of crap. And those moments, I think, were the most enjoyable moments of the book in a lot of ways, because I've read the Preaching to the Choir and a lot of the books that I'm sure you have on your show, and certainly the ones that I've read, you know, they tell me things I already agree with. These other essays sought to challenge my own assumptions, but they didn't succeed, because I kept finding myself going, what a load of crap, and finding huge holes in their arguments. And it just really was quite gratifying and enjoyable to read such ridiculousness.
You know, I also liked in reading your foreword, you mentioned being a father and raising your daughter and how we can't really predict what marijuana legalization will do. It will have benefits. It will have detriments. And you point out that, yeah, it might be good that we stop arresting 800,000 Americans every year for this, but will it make it harder to raise your teenage daughter? Let's talk about that a little bit, about how we get through to parents, because those seem to be the people demographically that are the ones that are in the way of legalization.
Well, yes and no. I mean, first of all, there are, among the 25 million Americans that smoke marijuana every year, there's an invisible nation of parents within that number. There's a lot of pot-smoking parents out there, and those are the people that are probably least quantified, because to say that you are a pot-smoking parent is right away to, in the eyes of far too many people, to admit that you're a bad parent. There's nothing wrong with pot smoking parents. And as a matter of fact, I've found that marijuana can even enhance the parental experience. That being said, the vocal minority or majority, which have you, will say that, you know, won't somebody think about the children? Mm. And the fact of the matter is I've thought quite a lot about the children, my child particularly. I don't want my 13, 14-year-old smoking marijuana for a lot of different reasons. That has nothing to do with whether or not marijuana should be legal. There's a number of things that I don't want my 13 or 14-year-old. And I'll even go further. There's a number of things that I don't want my 13 or 14-year-old to do that I wish when she grows up she may enjoy completely and with you know, a robust experience of sex, driving a car, you know, fine wines. I don't want them drinking at 13 years old, but the culture of fine wine certainly should be available to her when she's a young adult.
Yeah,
and I think that, you know, we have to understand that just because you are pro-marijuana doesn't mean that, you know, we're not anti-drugs, or we're not, we're trying to, you know, saying it's okay for everybody to smoke. Marijuana is not for everybody, and those people who don't enjoy its effects shouldn't smoke marijuana. But none of that negates the fact that marijuana should be legal. None of that negates the fact that it's a travesty that 100,000 Americans are arrested every year for marijuana.
Absolutely. The book is Cannabis Philosophy for Everyone. The editor is Dale Jacquette, with a foreword by Rick Cusick. What were we just talking about? We were just talking about this book, and it's excellent. Rick, thanks for joining us on the show. And before we let you go, are there any events that you'll be attending soon if people want to hit you up or say hi?
Yes, absolutely. There's going to be a fundraiser for Philadelphia Normal on January 20th, and you can go to the Philadelphia Normal website and find out where that will be, and I will be there, and High Times will be sponsoring that event. And most importantly, in Denver, Colorado, for my sake and the sake of my magazine, on the April 2nd and 3rd, we will have the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup in Denver, Colorado. I hope to see you there.
All right. That sounds good, Rick, and good luck for everything and everything you're doing. The book, again, Cannabis Philosophy for Everyone, What Were We Just Talking About? Thanks for joining us, Rick.
Thank you very much. Take care, plus.
All right. When we come back, we'll be on with Gatewood Galbraith, Michael Henning, and Diana Alder, the people behind the movie Hempsters. Plant the seed. Stay tuned. It's Normal Show Live.
Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back after a word from these 420 friendly sponsors. Wait a minute. This is internet radio. There are no dials here. Legalization. Decriminalization. Lowest law enforcement priority. Marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that interact nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement in prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now, we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our Normal Show Live Cannabis Conversations.
All right, thanks for staying with us for this extended version of Normal Show Live. Joining us by telephone, I hope, is Gatewood Galbraith. Gatewood, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir, I am.
Glad to have you. And also,
can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. We've also, I'm thinking, Michael Henning and Diana Alder. Are you available on the line as well? Oh, okay. Maybe they're not hearing us, but Gatewood, we'll go ahead with you here. We're talking about the movie Hempsters, Plant the Seed, and this is a documentary been in the making for a while, and you're featured prominently in it. Tell us about the documentary and what we're trying to accomplish here.
Well, I'm from Kentucky, and I've been politically involved in trying to get the laws changed there for some time. And given Kentucky's history and heritage as the world's largest cannabis producer for over 100 years, we thought it would be a good place to start the battle. And in 1990, early 90s, Woody Harrelson came to Kentucky to plant some hemp seeds to challenge the law. And his escapade was filmed by Michael Henning and the folks with his group. And they were there. They began archiving interviews with other activists in the realm of changing the marijuana laws. And so they got to Woody, they got to Willie Nelson, they got to Merle Haggard, they got Julia Butterfly Hill, and then they got me. And so they put this together. They followed our efforts over many years, and they put this together in a film that examined the entire concept of changing laws over about a 16 to 18 year period of time. And it's been updated, and it's been contemporized, and it's having its world premiere at the August the film festival here on Hollywood Boulevard in Hollywood, and it shows tonight at 9:15, and it's a great film. It captures a lot of stuff that should have been archived and is dutifully done, and it's an interesting film, and it's going to get worldwide distribution after this film festival.
That's excellent, and we love seeing more stuff. You know, one of our contributors is a vendor who does a lot of vending of hemp products, and of course he has to get all his products from China or Canada or Australia, all these other countries. And when we started mentioning that we're going to have you on the show and we're going to be talking about hemp, he was very, very excited about that. What are some things about hemp legalization here that you find are most troubling? What are some of the roadblocks we need to get past in order to legalize industrial hemp?
Well, I've kind of taken a look at it from a little different perspective than a lot of folks. I was the first hippie, I guess, to write a plan for legal marijuana for its economic benefits. I wrote that in 1976 and then talked about recovering the economy and especially the depressed economy of Kentucky by rediscovering its history and its heritage and rediscovering cannabis as a crop in all of its aspects, both the industrial textile and the medical smoking part of it. And so, but what I'm taking a look at, and what really motivates me is the fact that by their legalization of this plant, the people in charge, the man, has severed our relationship with the natural cycle of things. That they have taken upon themselves telling you that you can't plant a seed in God's earth. I don't care if it's a widget, much less marijuana. If they tell you you can't plant a seed in God's green earth, what they're doing is severing the most basic relationship we have in this birth cycle with our nature and with Mother Earth. So I think in order to do that, that the government has to have extraordinarily persuasive information that by planting that seed that you're harming yourself or other people. And not only do they have extraordinary information, they don't have one iota of information that says planting the seed is going to act to the detriment of the human individual. And then the United States of America, a true patriot and a nationalist, we ought to have much more freedom than to be able to be self-determinative and sovereign human beings to be able to plant seed in the earth and consume the green natural plant that comes up out of it. So hemp and cannabis became iconic on the turnaround from America as the home of the brave and land of the free over to a depressed, controlled economy and controlled population. And so given the history and heritage of Kentucky, it's a leadership in that. I thought it was important that the challenge to this fascism, the challenge to this tyranny, come from a state like Kentucky. And so since someone else was doing it, I kind of stepped up and took the leadership role on that. I wanted to thank Rick Cusick. I want to thank all the heroes that have gone before us in what they're trying to do. Jack Hare became a real dear friend of mine, and I delivered his eulogy at his funeral. And I want to pay tribute to all the activists out there. And this film, The Hempsters, is a tribute, in fact, to many folks. We're going to dedicate it to Jack Hare tonight at the premiere on Hollywood Boulevard.
That's excellent. This is at the Artivist Film Festival taking place Hollywood Boulevard, 9:15 p.m. Pacific time. We're speaking with Gatewood Galbraith, a longtime hemp activist and, of course, a former candidate for governor in Kentucky.
Now, my friend.
You're running again.
I'm running for governor.
Oh, excuse me.
Yes, I'm running as an independent in November 2000. I've run before. I'm running as an independent candidate in 2011, and it looks just absolutely excellent. We had the chance to put Kentucky at the forefront and to break a lot of new ground. If I get to be governor, the whole ball game changes.
Absolutely.
We're going to ground at one of the helicopters hovering over the fields and gardens of the people of the state of Kentucky. This is America, not Afghanistan, and we're not an occupied territory, and we're not going to treat our citizens like we are one. You know, our fathers and grandfathers didn't fight on the beaches of Normandy and Iwo Jima, so you had to pee in a cup to hold a job in America.
That's right.
We're going to try to lift Kentucky, out of, into prosperity by rediscovering the principles that made America great, the sovereignty of the individual, self-determination, and rights to privacy, which have been absolutely decimated in this war on the people in the guise of the war on drugs.
Yeah, absolutely. Well spoken, sir. You mentioned how the government is, you know, the man is keeping us down by, you know, breaking our bond with the most sacred thing we can do, plant a seed, something that connects us to the earth. And you say they should have to demonstrate, you know, a great harm in order to have that power. And in that respect, with that in mind, do you see that cannabis as a recreational substance or as a drug, so-called drug, impedes the fight for legalizing industrial hemp because the man can say, well, there's a harm from the drug. Do you see that?
That's what this whole film is about, my friend, is Hempster's plant to see. I wrote a book called The Last Free Man in America Meets the Synthetic Subversion. And what I say today is that the big battle is between the natural cycle and the synthetic cycle. All the kinds of commodities of civilization, fiber, fuel, medicine, and food that used to be produced by the farmer from the land has now been taken over by the synthetic manufacturers, and they did that by outlawing the farmer and criminalizing the farmer in the production of his natural products. So there's a great number of people out there who run the synthetic products that are attempting to keep it from changing, the laws from changing back. I call them the petrochemical, pharmaceutical, military, industrial, transnational, and corporate fascist elite son of a bitches who see the Constitution and the Bill of Rights as impediments. Are you getting that distracted noise, too?
Oh, I'm sorry about that. We've got it. Hold on.
There you go. That's no longer there.
Okay,
right.
Go ahead.
We okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Okay, yeah. You know, there's a lot of people who are setting policy in this country, the United States of America, right now, who have never said the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America or to the Republic for which it stands. They're not warm and fuzzy about us or our children, and they see the Constitution and the Bill of Rights as impediments to the implementation of a new world order and global economy. And as I say, I call them the petrochemical, pharmaceutical, military, industrial, transnational, corporate fascists, and these son of a bitches, who have taken the cannabis plant, which is the most productive and the most valuable plant ever domesticated by man. It's not the answer to all the world's problems, but it sure is iconic in that it's the answer to more than any other plant is. And so they have, they are dead set against the people reclaiming this plant as a heritage and as a tool to make life a little better for everybody. So I think that they're going to throw everything, including the kitchen sink, at us to try to keep us from making the change in these laws. But I favor what my friend Mark Emery says, and his slogan is overgrow the government. And I think that the critical mass has been reached in that. And I think that the laws are going to change, but what we must do is keep it in the hands of the people who are putting the market together right now. I'm happy to put the market together and keep it out of the hands of corporate America. They're up to no good, and we ought not let them have it.
Absolutely. The movie is Hempsters Plant the Seed. It's at the Artivist Film Festival tonight, Hollywood Boulevard, Hollywood, California, 9:15 p.m. And Gatewood Galbraith, you're running for governor of Kentucky. How can people help you in the fight to claim that office?
Thank you so much, my friend. I've run before, but this time the dissatisfaction is so broad and deep that a lot of people want to vote for change and never did before. They can go to Gatewood.com. Gatewood.com, see what it's all about, and I'll give you the world's shortest political speech. If I was going to lie to you, I'd already been elected governor.
Thank you so much, Gatewood Galbraith, and good luck in the governorship of Kentucky. Well, folks, extra long version here of Normal Show Live. We'll have the replays on at 3, 5, 7, and 9, and you can get the download at iTunes or at our blog, stash.normal.org. Stay tuned. We got another 45 minutes of show coming up here. We'll have Toker Talk Radio. Hang out and chat. For Cannabis Carrie and Ganja John, I'm Radical Russ. Have yourself a great weekend, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.